people for centuries how to live in such a way. There's actually a very simple technique, and I can teach you. I'm willing to teach you. Are you willing to learn? It's really simple. All you have to do is do exactly what I do and produce the same noise that I produce. Okay? Ready? Okay? Go! What's the matter? You just said a second ago that you would like such a thing. Now I'm going to let you off the hook. As far as I know, there is no Aboriginal secret to peace and deep wisdom. But if we just paid attention for a second, I think if we paid attention to what just took place and you became conscious of your thinking in just that moment, I think we can discover what gets in the way often of peace and wisdom. Because I would want to guess that for most of everybody here, not everybody, but most everybody here, one of two things happened. Either you kind of adopted a posture of thinking that was critical, evaluative, judgmental, thinking how stupid I looked, how foolish I looked, how silly I looked, how inappropriate perhaps you thought that behavior was, how ridiculous, or maybe even what a waste of time. I didn't come to church for this. Give me something more relevant and meaningful. Now, it's interesting, if there was such a secret to wisdom and peace, that critical, evaluative, judgmental nature of thinking would actually prevent us from being open to the mystery. Or maybe you were in the other group. The other group's mind was more fearful and worried. He's not actually going to make us do this, is he? You know, I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't want to look so... What will people think? Won't people judge me? What if I can't do it right? What if I fail? Now, interesting, if there was such a secret, that way of thinking, that way of thinking that takes the shape of worry and fear, concerned about what others are thinking, that too would mean you weren't open to the mystery. So the whole point of this silly exercise, and it was pretty silly, is to help you to identify your own patterns of thinking. And how do those patterns of thinking clutter your mind and clutter your soul? I mean, our focus this week on our journey to simplifying the soul, our focus this week is on cluttering the mind. And I'm convinced that one of the ways to renew our thinking is to learn how to stop thinking. A sports psychologist will work with that golfer to try to get that golfer to the place of what the sports psychologist calls no-think. They actually call it no-think. And what they mean by that is they will work with that golfer to somehow quiet the chatter in the mind, to quiet the dialogue in the mind, to still the mind, so that the golfer can just simply trust intuitively their swing and just swing. If you're a golfer of any level, Any golfers of any level? You would know how thinking impedes often how well you play. Am I not right? That probably your biggest detriment to playing golf really well is your head, your thoughts. Your thoughts get in the way of actually playing well. Well, I wonder if thinking can also impede our spiritual life. Carolyn Mize said, "Your soul already knows how to heal itself. The challenge is to silence your mind." Albert Einstein said, "The thinking that created the problem cannot solve the problem." I might send that memo to Washington, D.C. But think about that for a second. The thinking, the level of thinking, the way of thinking, the patterns of thought that created the problem, those same patterns of thought cannot solve the problem. Einstein says you need a different level of thinking, a deeper wisdom. And I am wondering whether that deeper wisdom is actually no think, stillness, cultivating silence. Meister Eckhart said, "Spirituality is not about addition, but subtraction. It's not about holding on, but letting go. It's not about controlling, forcing life to be the way you think life should be, but surrendering. It's not about ideas and information, but relationship and presence. It's not about certainty, but mystery." And then he said, "It's not about talking." How ironic that is right now. "It's not about talking, but learning how to listen." What role in your own spiritual life does listening play? Getting beyond your thinking to listening. I love the legend, the search for the Holy Grail. You know the legend of the Holy Grail? The search for the Holy Grail. The legend, I mean, the Holy Grail, I guess, is the symbol of that which we all long for. The legend says the Knights of the Round Table began their search for the Holy Grail in the deep, dark silence of the forest. Because it was only in the deep, dark silence of the forest that they could hear the wisdom of their hearts and know which path to take. Thomas Keating, actually it was Thomas Merton, some Thomas said, it was Thomas Merton, said, "My life is listening. God's life is speaking. My salvation lies in being able to listen deeply, hear, and respond. And that's only possible in being still and silent." Silence. Hence, he says, "My silence is my salvation." Our Bible reading today from Psalm 46, verse 10 says, as Janet shared with us, "Be still and know that I am God." Well, how in the world do you do that if you don't live in a monastery? I mean, how in the world do you do that if you don't live in the middle of the forest somewhere? How do you live that, be still and know that I am God, in this crazy, noisy, distracted, cluttered, stimulated, overstimulated world of ours, how in the midst of all of that do we listen to a deeper wisdom? Because folks, the thinking that created the problems in your life, our life, that same level of thinking will not solve those problems. They will not be solved by thinking harder. They will not be solved by thinking longer. They will not be solved by thinking with more thoughts. We need a different wisdom. Psalm 46 begins this way. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, I'm not afraid. Though the earth give way, though the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though the sea waters roar and foam and the mountains quake. We can have days like that, can't we? There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. There is a river. That river is within you. That river whose streams are wisdom and strength and grace. Could it be that that river flows deep within? Sister Joan Chittister said, when you meet the presence of God's love in the very deepest part of yourself, it changes the way you are present in the world. This psalm, this beautiful poetry, is an assurance to us that God is present in every circumstance, at every moment. So the invitation in the psalm isn't to call upon God's presence and to call upon God's care, because the psalm says it's already there. The psalm invites us to be still, to quiet the chatter, to quiet those worrisome, fearful thoughts, to quiet the judgment, the anxiety, to quiet the need to control everything, to be still and know that God is. The word be still, the Hebrew word rapha, we translate as be still. It can also be translated as cease striving. Cease striving. So the invitation here to be still is more than just be quiet. You know, sit down and be quiet. The invitation is something deeper. Silence here isn't the absence of noise. You actually can be still in the midst of noise. The invitation here is something deeper. The invitation in some ways is to get out of your own way. To surrender, to let go. To be still. And the Hebrew word for know, be still and know that I am God. The Hebrew word for know, yada, yada. The word there actually means something more than head knowledge. This isn't saying be still and come up with a new concept about God. Yada is a Hebrew word that means the deepest, most intimate relationship possible. To know, not just with your head, your heart, your soul, your whole being. Be still, cease striving. And to know in the most deepest, intimate way possible, in the deepest part of yourself, that God is. Notice it says, be still and know that I am. Familiar Moses in Exodus. God saying, I am who I am. Be still and know that I am. It's in the present tense. Reminding us again that we're not calling upon God's presence. We're not calling upon God's care. This psalm reminds us that God is present. Right here. Right now. And the invitation is to be aware of that presence. To open ourselves to that presence. Be still and know that God is. That when you become aware of that presence in the deepest part of yourself, it changes the way you are present in the world. Sue Monk Kidd tells this story. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And I'm going to tell it like as if she tells it. She says, silence is God's first language. Everything else is a poor translation. She said, there I was doing the laundry, and the kids were watching television, and we heard this thump on the glass patio door. A bird had hit the glass door. You know, we turned, and she said, as I suddenly turned, I saw the white feathers fall to the ground. You know, my kids and I looked at each other without saying anything. And she said, we crept towards the door. And my children followed me outside. I feared the bird was dead. But she wasn't. Her wing kind of crumpled. Not broken, just badly bruised. And she sat there all alone, fragile, tiny eyes, just looking afraid. And she said, this bird was perfectly still. So I got down alongside and I sat on the ground by the bird and I took my little finger and I started to just brush its wing. And I heard the voice of my child, Mama, Mama, why is it not flying away? I said, it's hurt. It just needs to be still. And so I moved alongside this bird. And my kids realized that nothing was going to happen for a while. So they went back to the television. But I sat alongside this bird that was being just perfectly still. And I had this irresistible feeling that we had something in common. That maybe perhaps we were both broken, crumpled wings, had hit ourselves hard against that which is harsh. And I just had this urge to cry for my own brokenness and for the brokenness of the whole world. And she said, I studied this bird deeply. And it seemed to instinctively know that there was healing in the stillness. And I realized that I'd been learning that too. Learning that stillness is the prayer that transforms us. And suddenly I heard a voice saying, Mama, is it done being still? And I said, not yet. Knowing that I was answering not only for the bird, but also for myself. And we continued to sit still. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 50 minutes. And suddenly there was a flutter of the wing, and the bird took flight. And as it took flight, she said, "I, my breath was taken away, and I saw the shadow of its wings move across the ground in front of me as it crossed where I was. And suddenly I had this feeling as if grace was everywhere. I went back to folding laundry. Everything was the same. Yet everything was different. Your soul already knows how to heal itself. The challenge is to silence the mind. Be still and know that I am God." What if you use that phrase every day between now and Easter, 5 minutes twice a day, morning, night? Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. And what if you took that stillness and allowed that stillness to carry you to that place where there is deeper wisdom? That place where there's deep love and acceptance. That place where God invites you to cease striving and just be. You might just discover that you can fly. May it be so. We continue to worship God this morning through the morning.